Good evening, James McKenney here with my Science Hour, September 1st, 2016. There's no way I'm going to get all this material in tonight. My main science topic is, I hope I get to at least start this, understanding Earth's population. You know, we're talking rounded up 7 billion people on this planet. What does that really mean? You know, if you look at a sustainable planet, if you look at agriculture, you know, things like that, what does this really mean? So, you know, resources, then you look at natural events, like right now, even the very well-developed countries like Europe, not to mention economic crisis, Iceland's main volcano, the biggest volcano in Iceland, is about ready to blow its top. It had two eruptions in the last couple of days, or earthquakes, and they say there's a large ice cap on top of the volcano, which may slow it down for an hour or so to give people time to become alerted. It's called Katla volcano, and if that thing goes, it's going to shut Europe down. I mean, it's the air traffic, economy, everything else, and, you know, it could be crop failures. We live in a very tenuous world, let me tell you. There's a myth that was propagated from the astronomy world back in the 1970s and 60s, especially the Carl Sagan era, trying to give people this idea that millions and billions of years have gone by, the Earth is just out in space, and the sun has millions and billions of years before it dies out, and we're kind of in this long-term pattern. And just the idea of climate change suggests that we have a stable climate, which we don't. Climate is a minute-to-minute, let me put it this way, we don't have climate. The last time Earth had a climate was back in the dinosaur days. And that was because they had a very thick atmosphere. Do you think out there in Wyoming where you dig up the dinosaur bones that, you know, how many dinosaurs are going to live in Wyoming or Montana or Idaho where you're finding these today at dry and it's in rock conditions? Not going to support many dinosaurs there, Professor. You know, dinosaur professor at the university. It just isn't going to happen. So the Earth was very, very, very different back then. In fact, the ocean floor was very much what we call the ocean floor. The continental shelves were exposed. There was probably, I wouldn't say twice the land area of Earth, but a good maybe 10 to 20% more than what we have today, easily visible. I was looking, as of course many people have, for the land of Lemuria, which is out, as legend has it, west of the Hawaiian Islands. And by the way, I'll be talking about these volcanoes. Oh, this is a huge story in itself, the volcanoes that were passing Hawaii this week. But looking for Lemuria, now, some people call it Mu. That was the antithesis to Atlantis. Atlantis was a very advanced, kind of like the United States advanced. There's indication that there was space travel. If you read my book, Atlantis to Tesla, The Colburn Connection, I talk about that. And by the way, my special of the week, my paid cast, is going to be on the topic. It's the first in a very long series, The World Before the Great Flood, Part 1. And I'll be talking about a guy named Baal, literally a man who then later turned into a deity in some of the older Phoenician religions that were passed then down to more recent civilizations. And by the way, which there are still Baal worshippers today. And so I want to bridge the gap between history, that ancient, ancient history before the flood. Okay, enough of that. But excuse me, let me add one thing there. This paid cast on the world before the Great Flood, this is somewhat for kids too. Not, this is, you know, a lot of these concepts There's a lot of problems today. Let's just put it this way. The majority, and many of you may not understand this, those people wearing suits, they look so honorable in Washington, D.C. Most of them today, not all, but most, are pedophiles, regularly attend strange rituals. They are Baal worshippers. When they make a promise or an oath of office, they do it knowing that they're lying, believing that they're belonging to a much higher entity, and so that lying at the oath of office is permissible. So you have to understand the world we're living in. There's so many people that are walking around with rose-colored glasses, and they just think that everything is rosy out there. No. The top politicians, and these are the long-term politicians in Washington, are extremely evil people. They're devil worshippers, Baal worshippers. This is the whole issue at Bohemian Grove. And so it's important when, and I say this for kids and parents of kids, when you send your kids to school, it is laden, and it's very subtle. These people are experts at deception. So I've told people, get your kids out of school. It's unfortunate, but it's really, 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 there's so much woven into this. The subliminal messages that come to you in school are, anyway, I encourage people to listen to this and with their kids so that you understand this. And, you know, there's a world out there that most people don't see and certainly don't understand. But you have to put the roots of this in place, and that's what I'm talking about, the world before the Great Flood, to understand this. And also I will be talking about the science of how all of this works. But going back to the original topic, this idea that the Earth has millions of years to go before anything changes, and we're worried about a 1 degree change in climate temperature change over the next 50 years. This is all complete baloney, just to sidetrack you and keep you from understanding the real issues. The real issue is we live on a very tenuous planet. We've had a few thousand years of actual grace period, which we've totally blown as a human race. If you look at the, say, the so-called development of the world and the space race, etc. By the way, SpaceX just had a big explosion today. These private space programs, they're not going to let get off the ground. That's just the bottom line. They're going to keep having setbacks, explosions, things like this. But, you know, they want the human race trapped on this planet, even though Elon Musk has signed the deal with the devil there with the CIA, etc. They're not going to let him succeed too far. He's going to have success where they want him to have success, etc. So, but very controlled success, let's put it that way. But the idea that the planet is billions of years old and nothing has happened in the solar system and we're floating around out in space, that Carl Sagan image of the world and the universe is simply absolutely incorrect. And then there's a lot of looniness that has come in regarding, say, Planet X. And it's a topic that I pioneered long before anybody even used the term Planet X. My original work was on capture methods in the solar system, comet capture as the method of developing solar systems. And we had a new planet within the last 10,000 years. It's called Venus. That's why it's hot and steamy and has that massive atmosphere, and it has a temperature 800 degrees enough to melt lead on the surface, and its atmosphere rains sulfuric acid out of the sky. A tremendously volatile planet, but very brand new. The solar system, the Earth, is very tenuous. We live in a very tenuous time. The Earth itself has a major volcano, the biggest volcano on Earth in Yellowstone Park, ready to blow up on a moment's notice. There's nobody talks about that in the mainstream media. We have to get the water out of Lake Yellowstone, one of my 11 major Earth projects that we have tried to contact government officials. But you have to understand, contacting a government official is like walking over to the wall and pounding your head on it a few times. You're going to get better results, you know, pounding your head on that brick wall over there. So anyway, that's just a little bit of an introduction to tonight's topic. First of all, a commentary about last week. Last week, I talked about a new, allegedly new, planet discovered around, or allegedly discovered around Proxima Centauri, our nearest neighbor star in the universe, in the galaxy. I went through this whole scenario, and then after the show, I dug into this a bit deeper, and the announcement was made just prior to my show, so I really didn't have enough time to, unfortunately, didn't have enough time to really research this thoroughly. They did not discover a planet. So all of this hype is for naught. And in fact, right now they're talking about, oh, this could be a planet that humans could move to. They didn't even discover a planet, and I'll explain why. First of all, when you read the public announcements, whether they're in a so-called alleged science reporting magazine or newspaper or online source, they take a title and they blow it up about 250 times what it really is. They need some kind of splash headline to get people to read their crap, is what it amounts to. Just the same as the regular news media. And so they make this announcement that somehow astronomers have discovered a planet around our very nearest star neighbor. And by the way, Proxima Centauri is not visible from Earth. Let's put it this way, it's a infrared star. It is kind of like Jupiter. It has an infrared signature, and really, with even mild equipment, amateur equipment, you cannot see it from Earth. But what they were looking at was data that was taken over a number of year period regarding redshift. In other words, the star would redshift, and then it would blue shift, and it would go back and forth, and they did some computer analysis, and they determined that this variability was on about a 3.2 day basis, about 3.2 of our days. So that's a very short time for an orbit when you consider that we take 365 days to go around our sun, and Jupiter takes 10 years. So the average planet, you know, Venus is like 250 days or something. So a 3-day orbit around a planet, that means it's right there, nose to nose with the star. It's just right there. It's like a couple million miles away from the star's surface, which is absurd because it's going to get French fried. It's understood that when something is that close, it's going to be like our moon. It's phase locked so that the same side of the planet would be facing the star all the time. And since it was so close to the star, it wouldn't have an atmosphere. That atmosphere would be completely blown off in a heartbeat. So it's not going to have an atmosphere or anything significant. And it's really not a place where anybody could live because you'd have two options. On the sunny side, where it's going to be about 9,000 degrees, or the cold side, where it's going to be about negative 9,000 degrees, not exactly what you'd call a habitable planet. But within another week, within this past week, I've seen announcements that are like, could be habitable, we might just pack up and move there, and I mean, it just got Looney Tune. But this is based on nothing. What they were looking at was redshift data. Nobody discovered a planet. Nobody saw a planet. In fact, they have telescopes now that can actually see planets next to stars and see dust clouds next to stars. And some of those are valid. Some of them are not. It's really, when you look through this, you have to really pick and choose because these programs, these search programs for exoplanets, they're called, planets around other stars, is so they're looking for funding, they're looking for notoriety, and the reality is most of these finds, or many of them I would say, are just bogus. They're not finds at all. They're based on very little data, incorrectly interpreted data, secondary data like this one around Proxima Centauri. So what did they discover? Or what is the real cause of this redshift? The real cause of the redshift, it's known that Proxima Centauri is a highly variable star subject to outbursts, regular outbursts. And so what you're seeing is the redshift that's due to the changing non-uniform electric field. This is the induced electric dipole redshift, and that is my theoretical work that goes back to the 90s. This is something that nullifies the Big Bang, the Hubble constant, you know, the expanding universe. All of those concepts are bogus because the redshifts that we're seeing are due to my concept, which is laboratory provable. I've shown it in classrooms. That's in my books. I explain how to do this, the induced electric dipole redshift. And, of course, I've attempted to publish this, but nobody wants to touch it with a 10-foot pole because it takes down the entire house of cards of cosmology. So I don't want to waste any more time on this show, but the entire topic of exoplanets, I've got a pretty big write-up on the Picture of the Day subpage. I have quite a few photos, and I'm sorry I didn't have them there at showtime last week, but they are there now. They were there shortly after the show last week. But go to the Picture of the Day subpage, scroll down to the center column on my webpage, jmccsci.com, and go to the Picture of the Day for last week. It would have been, what, August 25th last week. So go and look at that. But once again, I did not have this updated information when I posted that. And also, I'm going to be doing some further work on this idea that exoplanets are a place that are habitable. Now, to me, habitable means you could go in, you know, cut down a few trees, build a house next to a flowing river, plant corn and other crops, have chickens, and live there. That's what habitable means. That's what habitable means, that somebody could live there, not just one cell, you know, little weird creatures that grew on some other planet. Habitable means you can live there. That's what the term means. And so they're trying to paint the picture that they've discovered 4,000 exoplanets and that a certain percentage of these are habitable. Excuse me. None of them are habitable. In fact, let me just make this analogy. Let me give you five things about Earth that are very specific to us. The surface gravity, the amount you weigh. If you were on a bigger planet that your surface gravity was more, your bones would be, your joints, everything would have a very hard time adjusting. Let's talk about the amount of calcium in the soil. If you don't have the proper amount of calcium, your bones are not going to form well. Many people suffer from calcium deficiency, in spite of the fact that calcium is one of the primary components of planet Earth, yet many people are calcium deficient. They take calcium pills, etc. Let's talk about the atmospheric pressure that we live in. It's about, we measure it at about 1,000 millibars, milliliters of mercury pressure, whatever. And that's the pressure of the atmosphere at Earth. If you have an atmosphere that has a lot more pressure or a lot less, you're not going to fare very well. As you know, if you go up on a mountaintop, you have to really adjust. But atmospheric composition. We're used to breathing a composition of air. Like if you're a diver, you can use a mixture, kind of a less stringent mixture of oxygen and nitrogen, etc., but only for a very short period of time. The atmosphere that we breathe daily, we're adapted to it. There are so many other factors, but here's the point from a statistical point of view. What's the probability that another planet is going to have these same factors? The water content, the salt content in water, the mineral content in the ground in Chile. They can't drink the water. In southern Texas, they can't drink the water because there's so much arsenic in it. They can't eat the crops that are grown because it has so much arsenic in it. In Chile, they have a lot of boron. In the drier areas, they can't grow plants there. They can drink the water. Boron is not poisonous necessarily to humans, but you can't. The plants don't grow. So this is what I'm saying. This myth that is coming out of the astronomy world that somehow there are planets we can move to, and then this one around Proxima Centauri that it's habitable and it might be habitable for human beings is absurd. It is absurd. It's just a fairy tale gobbledygook. And like I say, this is what they pawn off on kids, on the internet, on adults. It's garbage. Scientific garbage. Unfortunately, I have to waste time on this valuable show discussing this and ridding the airwaves of these ridiculous claims. But it's necessary because that's what it is. If I didn't do it, nobody else is doing this. Nobody else is taking these people to task. And when you look at the authors of the articles, they're these bubble-headed, just out of journalism school idiots that don't know anything. They may have passed a freshman science course in college, you know. They don't know how to ask a question. All they do is repeat what they're told. It's absurd. That's why kids have to listen to this show. That's why parents, a lot of parents are turning their kids on to real science to learn from my books, etc. Because you're not getting it anyplace else. By the way, this is interesting. This has come in from a lot of listeners. I have a request for assistance, and a friend of mine the other day said, hey, you know, you got this amazing audience, and they listen, but some of them would like to do something. And I thought, well, you know, I do have a project that would require maybe 15 to 20 people to help me out, because it's kind of wouldn't say routine work, but it's something that anybody who's listened to my show and has learned a little bit about what I do, anybody could do this and help out. And so if you are interested in helping, and let me give you an estimate of time that this might take, 20 hours of your time over maybe a month period. So it'd be a bit of a commitment, or it might take a little bit more time. Some people might get a little more serious about it and spend some more time. But to help, you would need a computer, you'd need internet access, and of course, some available time. And I'd provide you with the material. So if you're interested in this little project, email to the following address. And this is, I opened up this email address just for this project, info@jmccsci.com. And so that's an email address that is only for this project. Please don't email other things there, because we will just screen them out and not answer them. So, and if people are interested in emailing me, I have an email address on my webpage, Contact Us, and that's where the majority of people would try and send in thoughts or whatever. But this is for a specific project. You would need a computer, internet access, 20 to 30, maybe 30 hours of time, I'd say max, over a month period, and we'll probably start this pretty soon. I mean, it's all set up and ready to go. It's just I need some, maybe 15 to 20 people to volunteer. And you'd be anonymous, you'll get more information, and I'll give preference to those people that I recognize their name. They've emailed in before. I've had certain, you know, levels of contact before. That type of thing. But anyway, once again, the email address, info@jmccs, as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo, .com. info@jmccsci.com if you're interested in volunteering. And it might be a good project for kids, too. You know, if some kids in the family got together and wanted to work together on this, you know, one family would qualify as like one entry, to help out. So anyway, that just looking for some volunteers, and the end result, we will actually be making public, although, like I say, everybody's names will be anonymous, but it's a very interesting study. I am collecting data on military-based pollution. And this past week, I just talked to a wonderful guy out in, he's out in Colorado. I've talked to people down in Louisiana. I've talked to many people now that have problems because they live near a military base, and they're finding out that there's severe pollution in the land, in the water tables, etc. And so I'm putting together a study. It'll be part of my my Paidcast series, which one of the series of topics in there is environmental toxins. And so if anybody has issues with being living near a military base, I've got one person that we've talked to, the whole family has uranium, high uranium levels. You can find out, by the way, the best thing that I found is to go see your practitioner and then get a referral to have a hair test done. And that'll list all of the stuff that you've got, you know, all of the toxins, etc. And it's not the most accurate, but it's accurate enough to give you a good feeling for what kind of pollutants or toxins you have in your body. So anyway, that's a study that I'm doing. That's different than the one I just announced. Anybody, you can email if you have information about military-based toxicity or naval bases or any other issues. Say you were in the military and you witnessed pollution and want to talk about that. You can email me at the website email address is jmcc@jmcanniescience.com, and you can find the link on my webpage. Just scroll down to the center column. There's a contact button there, a subpage. You can go there and find that address. I'll say it again. It's jmcc@jmcanniescience.com. That's the general webpage address. We kind of call that the black hole because there's like 27,000 emails in there. But we do try and keep up with that. So if somebody emails in, we're very interested in finding out if people have experience with military base, naval base, worked in the military, and pollution. So anyway, that's coming also. I've been getting rave responses to the increase in information on my webpage. Every show, I have the picture of the day subpage. I have extra pictures and written information that go along with the show. I have my paid cast, which people are just wild about because, you know, like this show, I'm talking about these issues, political issues in science. I'll be talking about the hurricanes over in Hawaii. They're a big issue here. But so it doesn't allow me to really dive into deep topics. So that's what the paid cast is all about. $3.95 a month. Every week you get another paid cast update. And people are just really love that because there's no interruptions. I go into a topic and I have an hour and I don't stop. So people really love that. And by the way, I'll be posting. Now we're into September. August was the first month of the paid cast. So if you missed that, you will be able to buy August shows, and you should buy August shows because these are sequences of shows. And you should start from the beginning. So in the future, as people sign up, they will have the option to buy previous shows back to August of 2016 so they can listen to all the shows and catch up, especially on these series like Tesla's Mind, etc. Just a quick comment about social media. Dump Facebook. There's another service that's actually being hosted out of Russia today. It's just like Facebook. I don't recommend things like that, but if you're going to do something, get out of Facebook. Amazon, I don't buy anything. It's Scamazon. Most of the things there are knockoffs. It's horrific. Amazon is a horrible place. I hope one day that we can talk about the days when Amazon existed. the WhatsApp, I talked about that last week. Get that off your phone. Get it off your kid's phone. It's nothing but spyware. It goes through their phone into your phone and takes all your information and sends it off to third parties. Get that WhatsApp off your phone. I just want to quick discuss something called handlers. Now, when you see what we call ding-dongs on the internet, the people that try and steal my work and pretend they're Electric Universe or whatever it is they're stealing, you know, the somebody that wants to think they wrote the Colburn Bible or some ridiculous thing, and it's not the Colburn Bible, it's the Colburn. But all of these people have handlers. As soon as these people pop up on the internet, the first day that they're there, the CIA sends out, and the handlers are professional people. Their job is to make them think they're important, that they're smart, slip them money under the table, make sure they have good web pages, make sure they get on, say, Coast to Coast AM or other shows where they're promoted, where they would never get in a million years on their own. And that's just an example. Handlers are all coordinated, so this is a coordinated effort. And you got to understand, the people who are being handled don't know they're being handled. They just think, oh, this is a guy who's supporting my work, and isn't it great? You know, so the money comes in, the books get published, they get on radio shows, they get notoriety, and, they can claim they've been working for 30 years. But the people do not know they're being handled. And I could give you dozens of examples, including the top radio shows, daytime radio shows on the air. These people have handlers. People in political office to the very highest level. Hillary Clinton has a handler. Obama has a handler. These people have people who are right there with them all the time managing them and making sure they do things. And if they want the higher-ups want something done, people like Obama are middle management, but they have handlers. When Obama goes to make a speech, he reads it from a teleprompter. Somebody has written the speech. Other people have okayed it. The theme of the speech, the gist of the speech, the lies woven into the speech are all planned and coordinated. This is done through handlers, through higher level think tanks, etc. So anyway, I just wanted to mention that when you go on the internet, and believe me, they have tried on me every trick in the book. But what are the top things they use for the people, the little people out there that they handle? Ego is the number one handler technique. Ego. If you can convince a person that they're important and that, you know, and start handing them money or giving them influence or giving them the ability to publish books where they wouldn't anymore, that all of the other things, the popularity, most people will fall for that. So ego. You don't even have to pay these people. In the military, the same way. Or in other walks of life, and people are walking around thinking they understand how the world works, that they're important, they got a badge, they got a gun, they got a secret security clearance level. Oh, man, these people, whoosh, you can't talk to them. They got a security clearance. Let me tell you something. 99.9% of all people with security clearance are buttonholed into a compartmentalized little point, and they have handlers. They have people who direct them, don't let them out of their box, and that's where they stay. So people like Snowden is an aberration, a total aberration. The majority of those people work in those security agency offices, and they go to work every day, they do their job, they have no clue what they're doing or why they're doing it, and that goes for the CIA too. You have a lot of people who think they're good people, that they're protecting their country, but they don't realize that the CIA is being operated from the World Bank in Europe. You know, and the people who operate the World Bank and the CIA and, control of science, all of that. But it's all done through handlers. So anyway, I just want you to know that when you see somebody out there in the public, they typically have a handler. I mean, they've sent to me, I won't even go through all of the things they've tried on me. I'm independent. I work alone. I fund my own research. The things that I do are on my webpage. I don't post on YouTube. I don't have other outlets for my work. I'm a guest on radio shows with bona fide, legitimate talk show hosts that understand what I'm doing and promote what I'm doing. But, you know, I work alone. Nobody runs my ship. Nobody tells me what to say or what not to say. I don't have handlers. Believe me, they have tried. Believe me, they have tried. But just wanted to mention that because it's important. When you see things going on the internet, in the world out there, mark my words, 99.99% of everybody out there has a handler. Just a quick comment about sports and sports teams, and this is for kids. When I talk to adults, I can tell in about a New York second if they've been on a sports team or not. The reason is because once you get down to the nitty-gritty, once you start talking about things or criticizing their belief system, you see them take it personally. They take it personally. Immediately, you know that that person was not on a sports team. People who were on sports teams, or a lot of the people in the military too, were trained to accept criticism. You know, you didn't do this. You didn't shine your shoes right. You didn't whatever. Oh, okay, no, I didn't shine my shoes right. By the way, I was not in the military. I personally have one of the only 1,200 conscientious objector status for the Selective Service that were ever given out after World War II. I am a card-carrying conscientious objector opposed to war and killing. And so anyway, that's I lived through the time when there was a draft, and I went through the entire procedure and got a conscientious objector. I still have the card that has my draft status, CO it's called, conscientious objector. But a little side note. So here's the problem. When you talk about things like Planet X or the shadow government or other things, and you're attacking people's long-standing belief system, and if they were wrong and you were right, they would have to admit that about 99% of everything they think is pure folly. And that's where you run into the problem. Most people cannot cross that barrier. And the more education they have, the worse it is. I have an expression that I use that in trying to talk to many people, in fact, most people, especially Americans who think they live in the most advanced country in the world and that if they got an A in school, they're the smartest guy on the planet. This is my expression. You would be more successful trying to cross the Himalayan mountains on foot, naked, with no supplies, than to make people even consider that their belief systems are totally wrong. And that is exactly the case. So what people do is they turn, and it's called ad hominem attacks. So they attack you, they laugh, they joke, they call it stupid, they call it tin hat, they call it conspiracy theory or whatever. And I have an entire show on this. I'm not going to repeat it now, but it's on the paid cast in August, how to talk to people about these type of topics. So anyway, it's a something that I refer people to. I think everybody should listen to that show, because when you walk out into the world, whether it's at work or church or wherever else, you know, in the family reunion, you know, and you open your big mouth, you know, you're asking for it. And you're, even though you may have studied my work, you listen to my shows, you think you know everything, you're dealing with other issues here. You're dealing with persons' personalities. But the thing I'm talking, get back to the original topic about team sports teaches something. When that coach takes somebody aside and says, look, you need to do this and everybody else is depending on you, you realize that you're part of a team. And there's some people that never realize they're part of a team. They're off, and you know, you're better off without them on your team, even though a lot of times they're the prima donna best player. And that's why a lot of times in tennis you have conflicts of personality conflicts, because these people have never been a team player. There is team tennis, but the majority of tennis players are individuals, and they have a lot of problems because they're prima donnas. You know, they're out there by themselves. They're not team players. Team sports are important. That's what I'm saying. I've coached kids team sports, and the most effective technique for getting kids to get their act together is, say they're all doing exercises or something, and a lot of exercises, especially for kids, they can be, you know, very difficult, and for some kids actually painful, because they're developing muscles for the first time, or they're gaining strength, and so it's difficult. And so, but the best technique is that, say, okay, you got to do, everybody has to do 10 more because Johnny over here is not doing it right. You want to see people react. You want, okay, get it right, do it right, we have to do more because of you. You want to see people react, and they do that in the military too. If somebody's not, you know, doing whatever, they punish everybody. You want to see a bit of peer pressure. That's, you know, but the point is that person learns, that individual learns, that he's got to perform because the group is dependent on him, you know. And so at any rate, but this can be a negative thing in society too, because when kids go to school, there's a lot of peer pressure, and it's really tough on kids. They want to be part of the group. They don't want to be made fun of. A lot of people are verbal bullies at school, you know, and kids want to be part, so that it's like they shy away from standing up for their belief systems. And it's really tough at school because of all the garbage they teach at school these days. So anyway, just a little topic there. It's a complex topic, but in general, kids with team sports can take criticism. People that did not go through team sports have a tougher time as adults taking criticism. There's going to be some new updates to my webpage coming soon. I was talking earlier about all of the positive response I've gotten to my webpage, a lot of the weekly and even daily updates, etc. And so there's some other new things coming down the pike here. And remember, this is a lot of work. It takes me time to develop this because I do this myself. And so it's as I work into these new capabilities on the webpage. But just keep an eye out, because there's some really great new stuff coming down the line here. Just a quick note on, this is not really political, but more common sense. It is very apparent from watching live video of Hillary Clinton that she has severe medical problems. And you're trying to talk about somebody that has to be at probably the world's most rigorous job for an 8-year period. It's really, really, you know, I said this on John Moore's show, saying it here. This person, for medical reasons, cannot be allowed to be president. And there are not just single medical issue. And, you know, there are many other issues with the Clintons in general, not to mention the long list of dead people, their activities. You know, I'm not even going to go into that here, but simply the medical issues, which are obvious. You know, we're talking about a time that's this critical in the world's history, in the history of the United States. If, you know, I don't know why they're letting her there other than she wants to be president. It's a small girl's dream, a little girl's dream to be president someday. It's not a good reason to let somebody be president. Anyway, this is strictly a health issue. And in fact, there was a reporter that was fired. I think he worked for CBS. He was fired because he pulled up a web page that showed issues with her health. So the news media is very complicit in hiding these issues from the general public. On to the topic of hurricanes in Hawaii. Oh my goodness. I made a prediction, and this was within closed circles, last week when these hurricanes started, this Hurricane Madeline, and then followed by Hurricane Lester. Just a previous note, in 2014, there were two similar hurricanes that followed exactly the same path. They came from the east. They tracked due west towards the Hawaiian Islands, and their names were Isel, I-S-E-L-L-E, and Julio. They tracked to Hawaii, and they did some damage, but by the time they hit the island, they were basically tropical storms. But I made a prediction about Madeline, is this first storm, that just passed by Hawaii yesterday, last night. The original predictions, and by the way, I captured all of the predictions, all of the weather maps, all of the satellite images, all of the tracking data, the predictions from NOAA, the National Weather Service, the National Hurricane Prediction Center, etc. I captured all this data. They were estimating that when it made landfall last night, that there would be 120-mile-an-hour winds, incredible amounts of rain, and it would devastate the basically the Big Island of Hawaii. Is the first big island, the easternmost island there. But historically, the legends of the Hawaiian people state that no hurricane has ever hit the Big Island of Hawaii. Many years ago, I tracked a hurricane called Daniel that tracked across the Pacific Ocean. It came up from the south, southeast, and it shorted out as it hit. It charted out to this island that's breaking the surface of the ocean southeast of the Big Island of Hawaii. It's a volcanic island. It's now actually breaking water there. The lava is coming up to the surface. That's how big this seamount is getting off this. And Daniel, my point is that Daniel short-circuited the electrical current that powers the hurricane, short-circuited to that little island. It jumped about 50 miles. The hurricane eye jumped at about 50 miles at the very end, and there was a 4.5 earthquake at the time when that hit. As Isel 2 years ago broke up on the island of Big Island of Hawaii and shorted out, there was a 4.5 earthquake in Hawaii at the time, although it was a bit northern, the farther north on the island of Hawaii. Yesterday, this was incredible to watch. The hurricane, the lead hurricane in this pair of Madeline and Lester, Madeline was supposed to just devastate the island of Hawaii. About 100 miles, maybe 200 miles east of Hawaii, as it just started breaking apart. This storm literally, it lost its eye. It started doing kind of convulsions. It stopped, it stalled, it started doing convulsions and breaking apart as the front leading edge of the storm would move over to the Big Island of Hawaii. It would dissipate, the clouds would raise up, and so around you can see webcams of, you know, parking lots and places like this. And of the, for example, Hilo Bay, there's a webcam that you can watch. There were supposed to be 4-foot surge and 15 to 25-foot waves coming in. You couldn't even, the palm trees were just kind of moving now and then. There was no wind. There was a little bit of rain. And the waves, now and then you'd get a wave that you could actually see a little bit of splash down on the bay rocks. And so anyway, this storm basically came apart before it hit. The other storm, Lester, which is still out in the Pacific Ocean moving westerly, did not. It started to break up. And it, now, by the way, the tracking of the storm changed also drastically. And so literally nothing happened. And so could you attribute this, as the Hawaiians did, to their god, which never allowed hurricanes to come on and destroy the island of Hawaii? But literally what was happening, now this is a case study. I'll be posting this on my webpage so you can go through all of the scenes as the NOAA predictions were made, as the computer generated predictions were made, and the estimated wind speeds, etc., and then see how this storm just comes apart at the seams 100 miles east. And literally, here's what happened. As you know from my work, my weather work, the hurricanes are powered from the electrical currents from the ionosphere. That's what drives a hurricane, not this stupid warm water thing. That's so ridiculous. And by the way, another proof that that doesn't work is that Lester was the bigger of the two hurricanes. And Lester was following over the same path as Madeline. And so how could the stronger hurricane be following the so-called cool-down water that was in the wake of the leading hurricane? It's just another example of how ludicrous that warm water concept is. But at any rate, as the storm broke up, now Lester is breaking up, and we'll have to see. I don't have the latest on Storm Lester at this point in time. But the news media also was totally remiss in understanding. They said that this was the first time two hurricanes came back to back across the Pacific like this. Well, no, just 2 years ago, Isel and Julio followed exactly the same paths. But here is what happened with as these hurricanes come into the Big Island. It's very different than, say, Florida. When hurricanes come into Florida or the east coast of the United States or in the Gulf of Mexico, they have a big continental shelf to cross, which is very shallow and sandy, and those are good shorting points for hurricanes. And so they start to short out and they start to drop their water offshore, but it's not enough to completely short them out electrically. This is a short circuit, literally from the ionosphere, the electrical current that's driving the storm, because over the ocean, you don't have a ground. You have the surface of the ocean. What it does, it ionizes the air as that air sweeps up the electrical column. That's what forms the swirling eye, etc. You can read more about that in my weather book. But what happens in the Pacific Ocean as these storms approach Hawaii, there's already a link, an electrical link from the ionosphere down to the top of the volcano called Mauna Loa. And that is a volcano that is around, let me pull up the height of that mountain. It's about 13,500 feet altitude, the peak of that mountain. So you can see that's a bit different than when a hurricane approaches Florida or the Gulf of Mexico, Louisiana, or even China. What happens is there is an existing electrical current sheet that is constantly attached to the top of that mountain. And so when the electrical current sheets that are driving the hurricanes come in from the east, they eventually just join. And so the current, you can imagine, it's kind of like a funnel at the top of the atmosphere. Electricity coming down driving the hurricane, electricity coming down attaching to Mauna Loa. And as they get close enough, they actually pull each other together. It's called the pinch effect. It's a condition that occurs with electrical currents. And the Mauna Loa literally sucks the current out of the hurricane that's driving it, and it breaks up. That is why the Big Island of Hawaii, through the legends that go back, you know, certainly hundreds of years for the Hawaiian people, possibly thousands of years, we don't really know when they populated the island there, but that island, which is different than the other islands don't have those kind of mountain elevations. The northernmost Hawaiian islands have been hit with serious hurricanes. And of course, you're out there in the middle of the Pacific. There's no place to go. There's, you know, certainly back in the old days. But that is why this particular land formation does not have hurricanes historically, because it shorts out the hurricane and it pulls that current across, the current that's driving the hurricane, long before it gets to land. And there's some residual storm left over. In the case of Isel, there was a bit of wind left over. It blew trees down. They had some rain, etc. But there again, it was not the absolute devastation that you'd expect from a Category 3 hurricane. The hurricane of yesterday, Madeline, was a Category 3 hurricane a day before. And it was expected to pass directly over the island of Hawaii, just maybe a little bit south. But the eye would have been right there, and certainly, you know, 90 to 100 plus mile an hour winds hitting the island with severe amounts of rain. When it hit, I pulled up a webcam of Hilo, and like I say, the trees were just standing there. In a real hurricane, those trees would be uprooted and blown across the street and non-existent. There would have been 20-foot, 25-foot swells coming over the break wall and no cars driving around. As it was, there was a little bit of misty rain, no wind, and, you know, certainly not hurricane conditions with cars driving around. So it didn't happen. And the National Weather Service, the National Hurricane Prediction Center, completely clueless as to what's going on. Looks like there's no point in me starting this topic of population, world population, tonight. I just have a minute left. I want to remind people that the red letter sale is still on the webpage. Great reduction in prices. And I'm leaving this up. I've had a number of people request because they're on fixed income, they're waiting for a check or whatever else. And I thought, you know, just let it roll. And I'm going to leave those sale prices up there. I encourage people to go there, take advantage of those. The major water filter items are on sale. And we're out of the Traveler, the smaller stainless steel unit. It's going to be back in a couple of weeks. We don't know exactly when yet, but it's posted there. But the red letter sale, jmccsci.com, is there. Go see that. Sign up for the paid cast, $3.95 a month. We're now in September, so there will be an extra button to sign up for August and get all those shows also from the paid cast. This week's topic is going to be The World Before the Great Flood, and this is a continuation of my book that was published in the early 2000s, Atlantis to Tesla, The Colburn Connection. Other shows in September will include September 8th, the next week, review of my work. And this is important because I want to put a lot of what's going on in these paid casts into perspective relative to my work. And so September 15th, the next week, Tesla's Mind Part 2, the Tesla Turbine. I'll be concentrating on that. And that leads into a topic that we'll be doing in October. I'll be talking about the Wardenclyffe Tower in October. So you don't want to miss those. For complete details, go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. This is Jim McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.